There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast.
On the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
I got fantasies, man.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think it's okay for me to have fantasies. I don't think it should be illegal.
Now, it depends what they are.
For me to have fantasies.
Definitely going to depend on what those fantasies are.
Well, so you feel like, you know, like it'd be kind of nice if you had like a pizza and the crust also has cheese in it, but it also has pepperoni and sauce in it. So it's like all around the edges of a pizza is like a big circular, like, pizza.
Well, I think that already exists. I'm pretty sure Pizza Hut has a very similar option at this point. Also, why are we talking about this?
I got fantasies, man. It's like sometimes you can just have a fantasy
and it
shouldn't make me a criminal.
No, but you're not exactly the person we're studying today. Welcome to the last podcast on the left. I am Ben Kissel with Marcus Parks.
Hello.
And extremely hungry Henry Zebrowski. I don't know what's going on.
I don't like him asleep. I like him talking.
That's good.
I'm gonna admit I'm slightly hungover, and for this episode, this was a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, it was a mistake only because of the nature of what we're about to go into.
Right,
all of which is very thick. That's the word I'm gonna use. Thick.
Okay.
And wet.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Well, that's what we're dealing with today. Maybe close to a gold star episode.
Close.
You think so?
It depends on what kind of stomach you got.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're kind of queasy. But also, I feel like a part of being hungover was about staying in character as Dennis Nilsson, because every single thing he did while hungover.
Oh, it's because you're doing your job too well. That's why you're an alcoholic. You see, get it? All right, we are on to part two of Dennis Nilsson, a.k.a. UK's Jeffrey Dahmer, which does beg the question, what if they met in real life? Would it have been love? Who knows?
Nothing would have happened. They would have just laid on separate beds next to each other, just coming on their own bellies. It would have been the perfect relationship.
Two positively charged ions coming together. They're just going to repel.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Dahmer wanted a zombie. He just wanted, I guess, just a sleeping buddy. Maybe it could work. I don't know.
If Dennis Nilsson walked into the gay bar with his corpse makeup on, and Jeffrey Dahmer was there, and that music hit, and said, like, call me Mr. Vader, call me Mr. Brown, and all of a sudden, his hands are up, and his hips are going back and forth, we're talking about the royal wedding I would have enjoyed watching.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes, and that was somewhat in honor of the royal wedding, our Dennis Nilsson episode. We went on over to the UK, too.
We went across the pond.
I can't believe those two beautiful people found love. Wow.
So when we last left Dennis Nilsson, he had just burned the body of his first victim on a bonfire in his back garden. But Dennis had also, in the meantime, between the murder and the disposal, swore that he was never ever gonna do that again.
Great, so we can just end the episode. I love that. I love it when we can end it early.
So I think it's a loose term, bonfire. There was a tire on top of it. Is that still a bonfire at that point?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I think so. But you remember, so he did a lot of drinking, right? Up to this point, he'd been really, really drinking. It was 7 months since him and his boyfriend had broken up and the dude had left. And so he was like free to be him and me. And so he went and he found himself in this bit of a pickle.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he was burning the body, he really said to me, like, it's my drinking. That's what this is. I've got to cut down on my drinking, which is what he did. He's just like, so I can handle myself. I can handle my shit.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, you know what? I got to make a go at this. I got to really get my life together. So I'm going to cut back. Not going to quit.
Okay.
He still had a couple of pints with the boys after work.
He's trying to fucking relax. And he's trying to hang out with people.
I do like him thinking just like everything in moderation. But meanwhile, he's just like,
get that foot back in there, you fucking piece of shit. This is like, you're literally hitting him with the stick back into the flames.
Horrible stuff.
But he didn't binge drink, and he stopped bringing guys back to his place, tried living a quiet life. But after Nilsson got rid of the body, the allowances started coming again. And about 2 months after the disposal, Nilsson brought home a Chinese student named Andrew Ho, whom Dennis had met at a West End bar.
Okay.
Because Dennis could still slick some game.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar to Dahmer, where he's out there, he's talking, he's jiving. They would say that, you know, like the sauce was what gave him his energy. It's what gave him the boost. And so he'd get a couple in him, and Dennis would turn into a completely different person. He'd start dancing. He'd start talking to people. He loved to violently argue with people to a point where it made shit really uncomfortable.
Right.
And then I wonder why it kept it's just weird that it keeps leading him to all these little hunky-doos, these little trippy-dips that he's doing.
Yeah.
So after a couple of drinks, the conversation turned to bondage, and before Ho knew it, he was tied up. But things escalated far beyond the safe point for Ho when Nilsson picked up a tie and advanced towards him.
Hmm.
Ho started screaming when he's...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because up until this point, you're just also... I mean, I understand everyone has fetishes, but if you're going to just lightly drop the whole, like, it'd be kind of fun if we, like, tied each other up, and he's just like, oh, all right, I'll do it, and then all of a sudden your feet are tied up immediately, you're like, whoa, we were just kind of having a conversation, we're trying to get juiced up, and then all of a sudden your hands are tied, and then he's just like, he comes out of the other room with a big fucking horny smile on his face, with tie in his hands, and that's when he starts screaming.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he said, as soon as he saw the look in Nilsson's eyes, holding that tie, like, he started screaming, and of course, like, Nilsson let him go, and Ho went to the police.
Okay.
But technically, no crime had been committed here. It was all consensual, and Nilsson had stopped when Ho told him to. But that didn't mean Nilsson wasn't going to kill him.
Hmm.
Later, Nilsson casually confessed that he had every intention of strangling Andrew Ho to death. He said he was just too sober to, in his words, give it the unbounded immoral force.
Hmm. It's like when you finally have just the right amount of beers to be good at pool.
Yeah. Right.
And then one beer later, I mean, you got a body in the apartment.
You are
a ringer.
Oh, yeah. You give me 1 to 3 beers, I will make some money on that pool table. And then immediately make money on the pool table by stripping on it after around 4 beers. And then it all kind of falls apart.
Here's some money to put your clothes back on. You, sir, you're the funniest one in here.
This is cool.
So with this one, Nilsson had learned, as so many other killers do, that if he wanted to kill, he had to get drunk. And that's what Nilsson had done 2 months later when he met his second victim, Kenneth Ockenden.
Hmm.
Ockenden was a Canadian tourist on holiday in London who had met Nilsson one night at a pub. As far as Ockenden was concerned, he just made a new vacation buddy, like a local who could show him some of the sights and take him on a little adventure.
I don't understand this shit. Maybe because I don't really travel that much. It's like we travel for the show and we go this kind of, you know, we got like, you know, I'll do stuff with me and Natalie, you know, like normal shit. But Ockenden, sweet Canadian boy, and he was just meeting people at the hostels and shit, just like fresh face, wide-eyed Canadian boy.
Right.
And the problem is that somebody like Nilsson just like, he just smelled it all over his chest and just knew that this guy would love to come to my weird, smelly apartment for some reason.
Yeah, vacation buddies, you gotta have some. I made some when I was traveling with my brother throughout Europe when I was 19, went to the Wild Wild West premiere starring Will Smith, saw Will Smith, and a young woman that we were that I had just met, she said, can you hoist me up on your shoulder so I can see? And I said, yes, but her top half was smaller than her bottom, and it was very exhausting for me.
Yes.
I had about 45 minutes.
That's very high up.
Yeah, it was hard.
So after a little bit of bar hopping, the two ended up back at Nilsson's place. Nilsson stuck to his rum while Ockenden drank whiskey and beer as they stayed up listening to records.
Hmm.
Listen to Rick Wakeman, Hooked on Classics, The Who's Tommy.
Oh.
At about 1 a.m., though, Nilsson handed his guest a pair of headphones, telling him he couldn't possibly enjoy this next record through the speakers alone.
Uh-oh.
You can, though. Anytime anybody ever says this to you, you totally can. You're like, no, I'm hearing the tinny tops and I'm hearing the bass. I think it's good. You know what I mean?
Right.
We just met, dude. He also just quit killing people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he had just said, like, I'm not killing people anymore. And then he immediately went, at Andrew Howe.
I know this was a year later.
That's still not that long.
You know, that's not that much time when you think about killing people. Most people go through multiple years without doing it. Maybe like 85 to 100 years.
I've made it 34 years so far without killing a single person. I mean, it's a long time, but...
And so Ockenden slipped on the headphones as Nilsson put the London Symphony Orchestra's classic rock covers album. And as this record played, Dennis Nilsen reached down, grabbed the headphone cord, quickly wrapped it around Ockenden's neck, and strangled him to death as he shouted,
"Let me listen to the music as well!"
But he gave him the headphones!
Yes.
What do you mean? That's great. I mean, I will say, that's great music.
Yeah, that's the London Symphony Orchestra's cover of Whole Lot of Love.
Cool. I like listening to music like that and only going the speed limit because it's hard to resist going faster.
But the thing is, he's got the headphones on, so he screams, "Let me listen to the music as well." And he's like, "What?
Huh?
What? What was that?" Meanwhile, he wrapped the headphone cords around his neck and started fucking choking him.
Jeez, crazy. Yeah.
See, with Nilsen, music was a part of the process. First came the booze, then came the victim, then came the music as a kind of activator.
Ooh, weird.
And if the moment was wrong, Nilsen would back off. But if the music hit Nilsen in just the right spot, murder was inevitable.
Yeah, dude.
So if Paradise City came on or something from Guns N' Roses, you'd be like, "Can't kill." Like, songs actually would trigger his murderous tendencies and others would turn it off.
Chicken the egg.
Yeah.
Chicken and the egg, because certain songs, he had pump up songs.
Yeah.
He had certain things that were like, this is what gets me really randy and really going. Like when I used to listen to Roll with the Changes in order before going into an audition in order to get myself in the right headspace.
All right.
And then the other day, I almost killed my whole family because Roll with the Changes fucking came onto the radio and I just started fucking blowing through red lights.
All right. Don't know what the song is, but it sounds kind of fun.
You don't know REO Speedwagon's Roll with the Changes?
We'll have this very white conversation off air.
So once Ockenden was dead, Nilsen sat down and poured himself one more rum and coke. Then, as he had with the one before, Nilsen undressed his victim, washed him, and put the body in his bed. But before joining him, Nilsen poured one more drink and sat there as he re-listened to all the records he and Ockenden had shared that night. He then fell asleep, woke up, put the body in his cupboard, and went to work.
In his cupboard?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, buddy.
So while Nilsen was out, he bought a Polaroid camera. And when he got home, he posed the body in various positions around the house and took pictures.
Polaroid cameras have seen more death than a coroner. And why did anyone invent that camera? It is like the death camera.
Yeah, it is. Of course, like, because you can't get those pictures developed.
No, you can't do it.
Mm-mm, no. Dahmer loved his Polaroid.
Yep, I think they would lose half of their sales if killers didn't buy their cameras.
So when Nilsen got tired of the body just laying on top of him, he picked up the body and sat it in one of his chairs and had a casual, one-sided conversation about his day.
Jeez.
While complimenting the corpse on its good looks.
Okay.
Oh, you look very good today. You look very good, very pale. I like that. I like it quite a bit. Am I being too forward? Wild, Wild Country, that was very good, wasn't it? It's a lot of content, I know.
So after Nilsen had his fill, he wrapped Ockenden's body in a curtain, put a bag over the head, and placed it under the floorboards.
Oh.
He then took all the records he'd listened to with Ockenden out to his garden and destroyed them with a shovel.
Totally normal neighbor behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a small London apartment. Like, it's a small apartment complex.
Right.
It's like, they're saying it's like, it's just a general area. They all just, I guess everyone is just not giving a shit and not paying attention to a single thing what other people do. It's like New York. It's I mean, how many times I walked fully dick out in front of my windows. And, I mean, no one cares.
But that hadn't destroyed all traces of the music they'd shared.
Hmm.
A few days later, Nilsen was in an office Christmas party that he'd help organize. And of course, being a music man, Nilsen had taken special care to prepare the appropriate mixtape.
Okay.
But Nilsen had made the mixtape before he'd killed Ockenden.
Ooh.
So when a track that he and Ockenden had listened to together started playing on the mixtape at the party, Nilsen dropped his drink and left. This was that track.
Okay. Jeez.
It's the B-song.
It definitely does make you scuttle. That's a scuttle in music right there.
It's Hooked on Classics.
That's called Hooked on Classics?
It was a big hit. Back in the 70s, it was a big hit where they mashed together a bunch of classical music tracks and just put like a simple 1-2 disco beat behind it. And it was a hit. Huge hit.
Nothing says office Christmas party like the dizzying sounds. Whatever
the hell that was. Well, yeah, obviously, this was, I mean, people were really into it. It's a weird time period for music, I guess. It's a middle ground between glam and punk. Is that correct?
Yeah, that has nothing to do with any of it.
I don't know. That made a good point there.
I don't know. I think it just seems strange. I mean, it's very appropriate for it to be Dennis Nilsson's favorite music for some reason. It's just him dancing lewdly to it in front of a corpse gives it a wholly different feeling.
Yep. I don't know. The British, they get down differently than we do. Remember that weird bar that we stumbled into in Glasgow?
Yeah, Glasgow. In Glasgow, when we went to that one place where it was like fully lit. It was like 11 o'clock at night,
yes,
and we walked in.
One.
It looked like an office, kind of like conference room, and it was a bunch of older people and younger people grinding on each other to Beyonce in full daylight.
That's right. Yes, I remember. Very loud music as well.
Very loud.
Extremely
yes.
loud. Now, Nilsson, after this incident at the party, he tried going to sleep that night, but it seemed like Hooked on Classics was working as a kind of telltale heart for Dennis Nilsson.
Ooh.
So finally, he yelled,
"Right, if you want to listen to the music, then damn well come out and listen to it."
He then removed the floorboards, brought Ockenden's body back up, sat it in a dining chair with the bag still over the head, and put the Hooked on Classics tape on the stereo as Nilsson sat there drinking a rum and coke, naked and crying.
Jeez. Are you happy? Are you happy you woke me up? I spent all day planning the Christmas party, and now I've got to play the music for you, or you won't let me sleep.
Cut to his neighbors just like...
You want to play the man? You want to watch the television show that we have on the one channel when it's just a man playing the cymbal?
It's a good show. So this is not even his rock bottom here.
Oh no, this is just the beginning of his career as a world class deviant.
And this was from his book. This is his own words here.
These are all his own confessions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, because you remember, he's living his whole life like he's watching a movie.
Right, right.
So as this becomes, up until now, he's lived just deeply inside of his own fantasies, and he made them real one time. And after doing that, it's really difficult for him to go back, mm-hmm. because now it's bringing it back with more force. And then for Ockenden, he felt a special type of guilt because people were looking for him.
Mm. And it wasn't just that people were looking for him, that he had also kind of made friends with him because they'd hung out all day long. So Nilsson's third victim was a 16-year-old runaway named Martin Duffy. He was strangled 5 months after Ockenden as he slept in Nilsson's bed. Dennis performed pretty much the same ritual as before, and Duffy's body spent 2 days in the cupboard before being sent under the floorboard with Ockenden's.
Mm, so he was still there. 5 months later,
Ockenden was still there.
Okay.
Yeah,
he was covered in a mixture of soil and deodorant sticks to try to hide the smell, and it wasn't working.
No, I could imagine it wouldn't.
Now, one of his neighbors did actually complain to Nilsson, just said, like, "Oh no, that's just the building settling."
Ah, yeah, of course,
naturally. It always sounds like young men gurgling. I forgot.
Then Nilsson hit a stride. Starting in August of 1979, Nilsson murdered 5 more men over the following 3 months.
So he really, now what do you call that? So he was leading up to it. That's his kind of berserker mode there.
Not really berserker.
Not really.
No, not really berserker. Like berserker mode is more like when they stop caring, like when they get really sloppy, because he wasn't really being sloppy at this point.
Wow.
He's just doing it.
5 in 3 months. That's a lot.
It's for lack of a better term, he's in the zone.
Yes.
Is that he is now doing, he's got a routine. He does it the same way each time. He builds it up. He knows what he's doing. It's the way he gets off now. And so he is just out there and he picks up very specific people and also knows as little as possible about them, which is what he learned for the problem with Ockenden, was that he had like these weird misgivings. So from then on, he was just trying to meet people real quick, get him back to the apartment to try to get a hold of that body as fast as humanly possible.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't even know most of their first names. Like out of those 5 guys, only one of them has ever been identified.
Really?
Yeah. The rest of them, like, Nilsson only gave like general descriptors like the skinhead and the hippie. And out of not just these 5, but out of all of Nilsson's victims, Kenneth Ockenden was the only one that got any press whatsoever.
But a part of it is that, yeah, he went for people that people weren't looking for. Ockenden had like friends,
okay,
that were going for it. So eventually he veered towards looking for people that were homeless. And then obviously what we saw again with Andrew Ho was that when he went to the cops, very similar to Dahmer, and he said, "We were just having consensual gay strangle sex." And they're like, "Ugh, Okay. And so it's like they that weird homophobia is a part of what keeps these people free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Nilsson also didn't care whether his victims were gay or straight because it didn't matter who they were in life.
Right.
All that mattered to Nilsson was who they could be to him in death.
Okay.
Yeah, like a loofah with blood in it.
So in order to mold his victims into what he wanted, Nilsson had a whole set of rituals that evolved over time. These men would be completely shaved, dressed up, and powdered with talc to help with the smell. Dennis would sometimes even set them up in a chair next to him, and they'd watch TV together while Dennis would make sarcastic comments.
Paula Abdul, more like Paula Babdul.
If corpses could laugh.
Yeah, just moving his mouth, being like, ha ha ha, you're the funniest man I've ever met, Dennis. And which I'm certain that happened once or twice.
I'm sure it did. Very macabre stuff here.
Mm-hmm. But in keeping with his fantasy, Dennis had a way to kick off each encounter. After the murder and the preparation, Dennis would leave the room and come back in so he could pretend to just accidentally stumble upon the dead body, completely removing himself as the murderer in the scenario.
What is this? Who did? Do I have a secret admirer? Oh,
so this guy, I mean, he's like a little actor as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in other words, like he was the very definition of a product killer because it doesn't matter because the whole murder was not the point.
Right.
He's actually having to pretend that he's not the murderer.
Well, he didn't like the murdering portion,
no,
right?
He did not.
No.
Okay. No.
And he has, you know, and then you're beginning a system of validations of like why it's cool what you do. And the idea is that, but I kill him real quick and really peacefully.
Right.
And then it's like, I'm not doing that. I'm not even doing it. They're not even dead. They're just in my house.
Right.
So, of course, the question you're probably asking now is, was Dennis Nilsson a necrophiliac?
Was Dennis Nilsson a necrophiliac?
Thank you. The answer is kind of, but not really.
Well, that's not really the middle ground answer. Kind of, but not really. When it comes to necrophilia, I believe we do live in an area of gray. It's kind of a gray world. A lot of subjective things going out there. Yes or no? Like when it comes to necrophilia, yay, nay. There's only two choices.
Do you count it as necrophilia if it's not full penny?
Yeah. If you're aroused,
if you're
near a corpse, it's a yay.
Yeah, no. Oh, come on. I've got a hand job in a graveyard.
As have I, good sir.
All right. Maybe it's just a shade of gray. Right.
Yeah, he never had penetrative sex with a corpse. Instead, he'd only engage in what is called intercrural sex.
What the hell is that?
I'm so glad you asked. I'm so glad you asked.
That's when you cross the legs real tight.
Uh-huh.
And then you fucked the legs, the thighs.
He was hot dogging it, where he said that he would press the butt cheeks together and then he'd rub his penis on the top of the bumps.
He only did that once. All the rest
is necrophiliac. Okay, it is put to bed. The man is a necrophiliac. I don't even care if we're calling it hot dogging it. It is not good.
No, man, he's the same as being a virgin when you're in college. If you're homeschooled and you learn from your Christian parents that if you put it in your butt, you're a virgin forever.
You know, I just don't think that that's true either.
No, every once in a while, Dennis would, if even for a brief moment, come to his senses. He said one morning he woke up in the arms of a dead man and thought,
this is absolutely ridiculous. Man.
Ridiculous.
It's the same. Let me explain how I got here.
Yeah.
Let's backtrack.
So yeah, I mean it's kind of weird. It's like the chicken shell that Taco Bell has introduced, the chicken taco.
You are obsessed with this egg taco.
No, I am now obsessed with the chicken taco. It is slightly more disgusting than the egg taco. Both of those are ridiculous.
Uh huh.
Not waking up in the arms of a dead man.
Yes.
But it wasn't ridiculous enough for him to stop. And Nilsson's crimes were starting to cause other problems because the bodies were literally piling up.
So he has six in his floorboards right now?
Not quite. See, he didn't have like a Chicago-style, Gacy-sized crawl space.
Yeah, it's European.
Yeah, he lived in a relatively small first-floor London flat.
Right.
So the space under those floorboards filled up pretty fast. And even he didn't know how many he had under there at any given time. When he was asked during his confession about how many bodies he had under the floorboards, he famously said, quote,
I don't know. I didn't do a stock check.
You know what? We're going to have you know. How does that? Just ballpark it for us.
You know what? Let me check in the back. I've checked in the back. I don't know.
I don't Ridiculous.
Know. He had so many bodies, he'd sometimes shove one into the cupboard and forget about it. Then when he opened up the door, the body would spring its way out from being stuffed in so tight.
That is... Good Lord.
It's just like, why is it like, when he comes normal, because this is obviously the scariest part, right? Is that in this apartment, everybody else is just living. Everyone else is going to work and having families and shit. Meanwhile, he's having Three's Company-like problems with many corpses in his apartment, which is just like, you know, there's a divide.
You know, at some point, he's just got to look in the mirror and be like, I am overdoing it. Just enough already.
I'm burning the candle at both ends. Right. This is just like, I'm making myself tired. I need to take a vacation from my vacation.
Absolutely.
Then there were the flies.
That would make sense.
Even though Nilsson did one bug spray in the morning and one bug spray at night, his apartment was thick with insects drawn by the dead bodies, both hidden and those fully on display.
It's his apartment is literally Vietnam. Yes. Like the war and the surrounding woods.
Yes. It's Dennis Nilsson sitting in his weird brown British pants with the beige socks that seem to be handed out from the government.
I think they might be.
His hangover sweat coming off of his body. Because every single, like what I'm smelling right now, I can smell the beer coming up from my breasts. And then with the bodies rotting, openly, full on, unapologetically, tits out rotting in the apartment. Covered in flies, and then sprayed down with bug spray.
Right.
So it reeks of bug spray on top of corpses.
Right.
And everybody still has the same descriptor. They say that it smells musty.
Right. Just go there. Just feel free to be rude in this case. Smells like corpses. Meanwhile, he's just over there making a drink like he's the Big Lebowski. Just a couple of ice cubes, like a little White Russian.
Oh, yeah, it's like John Hamm from Mad Men. Just like you know, just puttering around the house, kicking hands back into cupboards. And shit, just trying to act like everything's fucking normal. Just like you.
I don't know who's creepier, man. Like the house of, we got Gacy with the floorboards, Dahmer, and this guy. I think that he might be... Just as a home, cleanliness of home, he might be the worst.
Oh, you just wait.
Okay.
Because the flies that were drawn by the dead bodies also procreated in the dead bodies.
Oh, great.
Some of the heads of the older bodies were overflowing with maggots from the mouths and eye sockets.
At last, my love has come along.
Yeah, just two maggots just fucking. Well, Dennis Nilsson's watching me like, I am a job creator.
Yeah, did that ruin it for him when all the faces were filled with maggots? I mean, you would think that would be like, I don't even remember you anymore.
He did have a cutoff point.
Okay.
Right? There was definitely a point where, like, because of course, if there wasn't a cutoff point, then he wouldn't have had to go out and kill another person.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
So there was definitely a point where it's like, okay, well, this isn't what I want anymore. So I got to go out and get another one.
So you think he would have just had one the whole time if you could have frozen it, embalmed it just right? He could have just been okay with a corpse.
I think.
Yeah, if his impenetrable darkest fantasies were real and that you could actually have a permanent untalking slave in your house, yeah, then he would have been set.
Well, I guess it's not possible. Huh?
Well, in other words, Nilsson had a problem to solve here. But he had no...
In other words, he was in a pickle.
Yeah,
okay,
He hip-scopped, he skip-hopped his way into this scenario, and he's got to figure out how to work his way back. And we're going to find out in the next episode of Dennis Nilsson Knows It All how he does it.
But he had no car to transport the bodies, and his garden was much too small for burials. The only skill Nilsson had to draw on came from his army days.
Okay.
Cooking. However... Dennis Nilsson was not a cannibal.
Nah.
The same way he's not a necrophiliac?
No.
Because then I think he might be a cannibal.
Definitely not a cannibal.
Oh, okay.
He ate none of his victims.
Okay.
And in fact, even took very special care to keep his little dog Bleep from eating of the victims as well. Eating any of the victims as well.
But that's what they said, though. He cut it up into cubes at one point, and he looked at it. He's like, oh, it's just like beef. I could feed it to Bleep. And Bleep's just like...
Oh,
so excited because he would have all that fresh meat. And
sure.
He doesn't know because he's Bleep. Bleep is cute. Bleep is the BB-8 of this whole story. And then
He tried, and then he was like, no, I don't want it to make Bleep sick. Because he knew that one of these corpses would be diseased.
Right.
And it was true, because it turned out one of them ended up having hepatitis, and if he had fed that to Bleep, that would have been another horrible tragedy.
Okay, so a strange sense of right and wrong here, or just like he just didn't think it would taste good?
I hate to say it, but it was common sense.
Okay. So he didn't have... All right, so this is Dennis Nelson's common sense. Okay, I got it. It's a strange world we dabble in here.
Now, his plan was to cut the bodies into pieces, pack them into old suitcases left by the previous tenant, and store the whole mess in the oversized doghouse he'd made for Bleep.
Okay. And now, this is the thing. When he moved in with his boyfriend, right? Because the one boyfriend live-in, like the roommate slash boyfriend he had for a long time, you have to remember, this was an 18-year-old they said that had the mentality of a 15-year-old. So he was mentally handicapped, sort of. Wiggity weird. When they moved to that place, Dennis Nilsson's like, we're making a home here. It's going to be fabulous. And then it was like the song played lately, like, our house is a very, oh, very, very fine house.
I like that
and
song.
And he redid the whole backyard horribly. Like, he made these weird section parts and then a gigantic, sinister looking shed in the back. He's like, it's for Bleep. Meanwhile, Bleep's a 10-pound dog that didn't need an entire shack in the back of your apartment complex. And so eventually, when the kid left, he was left with, like, he made an infrastructure almost accidentally. It's like, yep, his fingers did the walking.
Yeah, you know, when you do get a dog, that the apartment is the dog's and the doghouse is for you. Because they are in control.
But as it was with most things in Nilsson's life, the whole butchery process came with a ritual. Before each dissection, Nilsson said he would always masturbate next to the victim's bodies as his own little way of saying goodbye.
You know, I just hope that butchers don't actually do that.
Adios. It's been fun. All right. Because you get that clarity of thought once you jerk off.
Yeah, I guess.
And then you look at this again and be like, huh, this is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm going to be more skeptical when I go into the meat hook shop there in Greenpoint or in Williamsburg.
You know, if the guy keeps winking at you, be like, I just cut up these pork chops.
I'm actually just going to start asking that immediately. Like, whenever I get any meat from a butcher, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. I just wanted to know. Good.
Then, after the ritual, Nilsson would get dressed again, pour himself a drink, put Bleep and the cat outside, get naked again, and begin.
Jeez, Bleep knew this guy was fucked up.
He actually said Bleep was just fine with it. Like, Bleep would come up and, like, sniff the body sometimes, but he said he kind of just treated it as another object. Like, he'd be doing all this shit, and Bleep would be off in the corner of the room just sleeping.
Yeah. I just feel like there's the Secret Life of Pets Bleep edition where he's just talking to another dog in an alley, be like, I think my owner is real fucked up.
We do Secret Life of Pets 3, R-rated, about fucking Bleep. Oh. And him just like licking the dead corpse and just like salty different meats for me. And just like all like very strange. And him being like, get out of there, Bleep, get out. Because it's all just him treating him. Dogs are so good.
No. Now, while you'd think this would be extremely bloody work, remember the blood congeals in a body after the heart stops pumping.
Mm.
There was no more blood from Nilsson's work than you would get from cutting into a raw piece of steak.
Okay.
But what you gotta do, though, is you have to let a steak sit to room temp. That's what's really important, and let it really sit. And then when you sear it on each side, that's
right,
6 minutes at least each side, depending on the pound of the meat. You want to get a good hot, like, grill going, and
yeah,
then sear it, and then the juices really will come if you let it sit after it's done cooking for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Sounds like you masturbated before you made that steak.
Yeah.
First, Nilsson would remove the internal organs and place them in a plastic bag for later use.
Then,
the head, which would be cut off and boiled in a large pot on the stove to remove the flesh, hair, and brain.
Okay.
After that, it was just a matter of breaking the body down into chunks that could fit in Nilsson's suitcases. The flesh and bones were to be stored in the doghouse, but the viscera that he put in the plastic bags, that was something else altogether.
And again, musty?
Musty.
Doesn't that have to smell different than musty?
Damp was another descriptor.
Ugh.
Musty. I'd say it's a good, it's a musty. I'd say it smells like a little bit like a, maybe we should light a little Yankee candle in here.
I would think so.
Now, out of all of it, the viscera was what smelled the most. So in order to get rid of it, Nilsen would put the bags outside between the double fencing next to his garden as a meal for what he called the wee beasties of the night.
Like me, Phil. Yeah, I'm just one of the beasties of the night. Thank you so much. I have a little bit of this viscera. Ooh, good and stinky. But thank you. See you soon. Keep doing this.
Wow.
Because I'm just out at night walking around looking for bags of viscera.
That's crazy.
But the thing was, Nilsen always had to get blackout to do all this. So after one mass dissection, as he called it, he took a bag of viscera out with him on a whim as he took Bleep for a walk because he was fucking trash, so he wasn't thinking about what he was doing. So not thinking clearly, Dennis, in broad daylight, just left a garbage bag full of intestines by the side of the road in a park for a biology student to find.
It's a blooper.
It's a blooper. It's wow. It's a hop skip. It's a dingle dum. He's just having a bit of a bop, and he flip topped and he flippity flipped.
So he woke up and he realized he was losing a bag of intestines?
Well, the student, knowing what it was, called the cops. But when the cops arrived, they decided it's probably just animal guts. It's not really worth checking it out.
Yeah, does a dog normally have a 12-ounce stomach? How much guts are in a dog?
I would imagine not that much guts. I would imagine they thought it would be sheep's guts.
Could be.
Where are you getting the sheep guts from? It's just a bag on the street.
I'm just going to say I'm going to chalk it up to cultural differences.
Yes. So meanwhile, Phil comes over. He's like, I don't need to call the cops. Something like this. Bag of viscera. You call me. Oh, Phil. Beast of the night. All right. Thank you so much. Let me weigh some of these. Oh, these are, there's about a pound of homosexual guts. Love them. All right, I'll see you soon.
I mean, would the...
Thank you again. Call me next time.
Wouldn't the animals that are eating this stuff start trailing it all around the place? Just a bunch of intestines, a heart here or there?
I think it got found pretty fast. Okay. And so the cops, thinking it was just a bag of animal guts, just threw it in the trash, covered in Nilsen's fingerprints.
Jeez.
And Nilsen just continued on his merry way.
But
as I said, Nilsen took no pleasure in the dissection part of the process because while he was doing it, he'd usually throw up in the sink multiple times. He said the body was merely a dirty dish to clean up after a meal, a relic of mood, as he called it.
God, I mean, I guess it's a little humanizing knowing that he got sick when he was chopping up bodies.
I don't know, man. It's almost even fucking worse. Because there's like a part of me that like...
But what?
I understand it would be scary if he was emotionlessly doing it. Like just kind of dead-eyed, chopping up a body. But there's something even worse where it's a guy like got like a fucking turkey carver.
Yeah.
And it's like... Meow, 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 meow.
Yeah,
like as
is.
He's just pouring Bacardi and rums into his fucking gullet just to keep going.
I mean, he's not even using an electric carving knife. He did all of this with just like regular kitchen knives.
Ah.
Yeah.
Let's cut to an ad for Ginsu knives. I mean, it really is scarier to me knowing that he did feel, I guess, empathy? Is that the right word? Or was he more like, woe is me, I can't believe I have to cut up this corpse again?
It was like that. Honestly, that's how he viewed it. He had to be like, oh, I gotta dissect more bodies. And it's like, yeah, man, you keep making them.
Right.
Yeah. And this process, the dissection, put it in the suitcases and put it in the shed, that only worked for a couple of bodies.
Right.
At this point, Nilsen had to contend with six.
Jeez.
So, in late 1980, Nilsen figured it was time for another bonfire.
Okay.
On one cold Saturday, Nilsen went to a dump near his house and found some old furniture. He dismantled all of it and built a 5-foot-high pyre with a 3-foot ring in the middle.
The first Burning Man.
Guess all!
On fire.
And after he was done, he went out for a few drinks. Came back home for a good night's rest.
Got to.
He woke up the next morning at 6:30 a.m. before his neighbors were awake and took the bodies out of the floorboards and into his garden. He covered them in wood, a couple of tires, and some paraffin and lit them on fire. He then opened the French windows to his apartment, faced his speakers outside, and tended the fire all day as he listened to, no shit, this album over and over again.
Oh my God.
In the middle of the day.
This is horrifying.
This is a theme to The Exorcist.
Yes.
Just hanging out.
What you doing over there, neighbor? How are you?
I'm burning up several bodies.
All right. You want to make s'mores?
Oh, you probably shouldn't because of all the burning bodies I have in this fire.
That's Tubular Bells by Mike Oldfield. Mike Oldfield was a particular favorite of Dennis Nelson.
Okay.
He wasn't listening to it because it was The Exorcist and because it was creepy.
Right.
He was listening to it because that's just music he really enjoyed.
Wow.
Actually, Dennis Nelson, he loved Westerns. That was his favorite type of movie.
Okay. I mean, have we heard of someone so brazen as this before? I mean, this is like crazy. I know like Gacy put some in the river behind his house or the stream there, but this is nuts.
He was in.
You know what I'm
going to
say?
On.
This is nuts.
I've
reached peak. This is nuts.
This is nuts. He was very sick, and he felt like all of this wasn't really happening.
Yeah,
all of this was just the movie playing in his head, and you're just the guy in his movie, Kissel. That's it. So yeah, so it's normal for him. It's just like really not normal for everyone else.
Right, so it's like Johnny Depp in the movie Blow when he's like, if you're carrying 10 pounds of cocaine through an airport, just pretend like you're not, or something. There was some quote like that.
Yeah.
So he just pretended like everything was fine, and everyone's like, it can't be that crazy. He's totally cool with it.
Oh, there were witnesses. That day,
a
group of kids happened upon the fire, and Nelson sat there as they poked at the fire with a stick, and he said he just sat there imagining them dancing around the flames in an almost pagan display of remembrance.
Wow, I will say, pretty cool day to be a kid.
You get to see
all of my friends
a burning
wanted to
body.
Yeah, we wanted to find the body so bad.
Everyone did.
Yeah, never did, though.
It is fun. But I also remember this about Dennis Nelson. I wanted to even bring this up about the last time. That, like, he came from a horror town. Like, he came from a city of ghouls, and then it's like if a ghoul went to City University, and now he's living in downtown London, living the city life.
Right.
He is just a man from Halloween Town that is, like, doing all this shit like it's normal, because this is what he would do back in the day, just burn bodies, like, wiggity-wiggity.
Right. Yeah, it's like the Santa Claus. Santa Claus in Tim Allen
the Santa Claus?
Yeah.
How's it like that?
Well, because he's a crazy character. But he was around normal people. He's like not from around there. You know, but then
this could be further away from the Santa Claus.
Santa Claus did murder somebody. Tim Allen murdered
Tim
a racial
Allen
Santa
did.
Claus.
Yeah. And I also imagine Tim Allen in real life is probably culpable of many other crimes.
Well, he was arrested. He was stealing cars back in Detroit.
Yeah.
Well, after the fire was burned out, and whatever bones had been left over were crushed by Nelson's rake. Nelson went out on the town, picked up a guy from a bar on St. Martin's Lane, took him home, and had his first normal sexual experience in 2 years.
Congratulations!
Wow.
Yay! He's normal again. He's fixed.
Yeah, so that man is just like the luckiest person around.
He's very lucky, yes.
Very lucky.
No, it sounded like it was a gross night. Either way, it wasn't like Nelson rocked his fucking world and then he left. It was like, it's always the same thing. They go back to the house and he can't get it up because you're not dead.
Yeah.
Ah.
Now, this was supposed to be a fresh start for Nelson, a way to figuratively and literally clean house.
Okay. It's kind of like, do you know when you clean your apartment after a really long time, like if your apartment's like nasty and shit and you finally like you clean it all up
Whole day.
You're like, it will never get dirty.
Never again.
Never again. We're never doing this ever.
Nope.
Come on. We got a system now. I got a recycling bucket. We're going to do all of this in one go every night. We're going to pick up. Immediately.
Yep.
But as it usually is, the break was short-lived, as by April of 1981, Nelson had killed 3 more men.
Oh,
Jesus.
Unidentified to this day.
So we're up to 9 now, right? That's where he's at?
11.
11? My God.
Yeah, we're up to 11.
Okay.
The last victim to die in Melrose Avenue was Malcolm Barlow. Now, Barlow was an interesting case, as it seems Nelson murdered him out of sheer annoyance.
Wait, this guy managed to annoy Dennis Nelson?
Yeah.
He must be Holden. He must be Holden McNeely from the now defunct round table of gentlemen or wizard and the bruiser. Wow, that's actually a skill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One night, Nilsson found Barlow passed out on his street, and so Nilsson invited the guy home. But Barlow was an epileptic, and he had a seizure, so Nilsson called an ambulance. Nilsson figured that was the end of it, but the next day, Barlow showed back up, either to thank Nilsson or maybe to freeload a little bit more, because this guy was kind of known as, he was just kind of known as that type of guy.
And just to clarify, not to malign the victim, he did not deserve to die. Okay.
Of course he didn't deserve to die.
I'm just saying that because I said that thing.
Yeah.
Well, part of it, I guess it's real common for guys to just sleep in other guys' apartments.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's just a hookup.
Like, no. This is just a dude.
Oh, this is just a guy hanging out. They weren't having any kind of hookup at all.
Oh, no. Most of Dennis Nilsson's victims actually weren't gay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I did not realize that.
Yeah, only a single gay. And that's the big misconception about Dennis Nilsson is that, like, all of his victims were gay. A lot of them weren't.
Okay.
A lot of them were just guys that, you know, were either looking for a place to stay for the night
sure.
or just, like, Ockenden or just like, yeah, sure, I'll hang out. You seem cool.
Right. Okay.
That was an activity that happened quite a bit in my early 20s.
Yeah.
But since hitting mid-30s, I can't imagine just having another 35-year-old dude that I just met just, like, sleep in my house.
Oh, yeah.
I also have, like, a family and stuff, so it's not the same.
Today's Last Podcast on the Left is brought to you by MyBlue. Sometimes it's hard to find a satisfying vape that's simple and convenient, but Blue, who introduced vaping to the world, is now introducing MyBlue. MyBlue gives you all the satisfaction with none of the hassle. Just click and go. With MyBlue's easy-to-use one-quick liquid pods, you can switch between flavors in seconds, and they've got a range of flavors to choose from. All you gotta do is just charge it for 20 minutes and you are set all day long. And it comes with a free limited lifetime device warranty called MyCare. So for a limited time, Blue is letting you try their new MyBlue starter kit for just $1, but hurry, this won't last long. Terms and conditions apply. Go to myblue.com, MyBlue.com today to learn more.
So, Nilsson, ever polite, let Barlow back into his house, poured him a drink and left the room. And when Nilsson came back, Barlow was passed out. So, instead of calling another ambulance, Nilsson just strangled him to death.
Hmm.
The next day, Nilsson didn't even bother prying up the floorboards to put Barlow under. He just dragged the body to the kitchen, stuffed it under the sink, and went to work for the day.
Jeez.
Because you got to remember, this whole time, Nilsson's still going to work.
Right, he's got a day job.
And he's barely missing work.
My God.
Here and there, but for the most part, no.
They said he had an incredible resilience. Because you'd be out all night drinking. And then murdering, and then you got to struggle with the body, and then he just wake up and go right to work, just like all prim and proper.
Crazy.
There you go. He was a pain in the ass at work, I had heard.
Yeah.
When he wasn't just being entirely silent, he was a little grumpy, but I think he was tired secretly.
But Barlow wasn't the last victim in Melrose Avenue because Nilsson was caught or suddenly overcome with remorse.
Hmm.
Nilsson's time at Melrose ended because his landlord wanted to renovate the apartment.
Oh, God.
And so the landlord forced Nilsson out through intimidation by hiring guys to break into Nilsson's house to pour tar all over his furniture and his record collection.
This landlord, what a schmuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
He also
hired
the same guys to just, like, hang outside of Nilsson's apartment and be like, so are you thinking about moving? And then finally, they just gave Nilsson £1,000 to leave.
Wow. This is why they're always flipping coins on the corner. They're finding people to throw tar in tenants' apartments.
But it's true. Think about this. He's got a bunch of bodies in his house.
Right.
And so up to this point, it's like in this normal British person's life, if he didn't have a bunch of bodies, this would be a tragedy. The landlord shows up being like, we got to fucking get in there. You got to move out. We're renovating the house and we're going to up the price and give it to somebody else. And then normally they're like, we'll scare this guy because we're fucking creepy gangsters. Meanwhile, it's gangsters going to the house where they must have, the first thing they walk into this place to ransack it, and they were like, huh, musty.
Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, usually gentrification has a lot of bad ramifications, but in this case, maybe it was a good thing.
It might have been. And so, 2 days before Nilsson was due to move out, he built one last bonfire and burned his remaining 4 victims.
He had 4 in there right now?
He had 4, yeah, because he had burned the first guy, and then he had another 6 to contend with, and he burned those 6, and then he had these 4 to deal with.
Jeez.
Yeah, so there was a lot.
And then you got all the tar you got to clean up.
Too much.
Yeah.
So on October 5th, 1981, Nilsson left Melrose Avenue and moved to 23 Cranley Gardens in the Muswell Hill district of London.
Ooh.
And this is where he got his nickname, the Muswell Hill Killer, mm-hmm. one of them. That was one of his nicknames. And also, it was the center of an incredible movie called Muswell Hill with Hugh Grant and Julie Roberts, about a young star that just got up. And then Hugh Grant murders her and plays with her nude body like it's a toy for several months. Very controversial film that I actually thought PG-13, yeah. which was like surprised by the rating.
Kind of a nodding off hill there. It's kind of crazy.
No, this place was nowhere. That was very good, Ben.
Thank
good.
You.
I'm sorry I did good. Not give you the attendant praise for that
It
one.
Doesn't matter, good. Man. It doesn't matter, you know?
No, this place was nowhere near the ideal murder spot that Melrose Avenue had been.
Is this a nicer place or a worse part of town?
It's actually a nicer part of town. Okay. Yeah, much nicer. Once more, Nelson was trying to give himself a fresh start, so he accepted an attic apartment with no space under the boards to store bodies. So he figures...
Now there's no way, I can even do it. I can't even do it. I can't if even wanted me to. I got rid of the floorboards. This is going to be... This is it. Yep. Never again.
It's like when you cut the pizza into smaller slices. You're not going to eat the whole pizza. It's a smaller slice.
Predictably, Nelson only lasted a month before his first attempt.
Okay.
In November, Nelson took home a guy named Paul Knobs. They got drunk and fell asleep, but Knobs woke up in the middle of the night with a pain in his neck. He got up and looked in the bathroom mirror and found that his eyes were bloodshot. He immediately left and went to hospital, as the British call it.
Okay.
Very good.
And was told by the attending doctor that, hate to tell you this, but you've been strangled.
What? That's strange.
Well, it's very creepy because it's sort of like, have you guys experienced it in LA at all? But where I have had like a earthquake in the middle of the night, it's like when you're sleeping and it feels like the room jumps and you like wake up from it and you're like, I don't know what the hell just happened. It was like the same thing for this dude, except he woke up just like he had been strangled.
Right.
But he was in the middle of the dead sleep. So he didn't understand what was happening. He looked over at Dennis Nilsson and he's just like, I don't know what happened. I don't know. Oh, well, not me. Well, and then he had to go back to sleep normal and then wake up. And his whole neck was just fucked in this weird half sleep where he was so close to being dead.
Yeah. Wow. Did Nelson think that he had killed him?
No.
Oh, he didn't think that he had.
No, he didn't think he had.
Oh, okay.
This is a weird period in Nelson's life.
Okay.
This is a weird period in Nelson's
life. Yeah, as opposed this to every one. Other this one normal is. Period in this well, man's life.
Well, the problem was that Paul Knobs was in the closet. So rather than even taking the risk of outing himself, he just left it alone. He didn't report it at all and never went back to Nelson's place.
It does seem like he has been on the police radar for a little while now. This is the third person or second person?
You know, this is a point in time where, you know, all of the reports were all still written down on note cards. You know, there's not going to be a computer system for them to type in and see the name Dennis Nelson come up like four or five times.
Sure.
He'd been reported a couple of times, but besides the, I would say besides, up to this point, besides the whole bag of viscera thing, there hasn't been a close call with the cops just yet.
Just the bag of human organs.
Yes. Okay.
In this case, they brought him back to the precinct where he was a cop for 8 months. So when he showed back up as a guy, like they were all like, okay, he's weird. But they thought that what happened, essentially, they thought that he got caught in the middle of a gay thing, and they all had kind of thoughts about him, and so they just kind of let him go. But he went back, like a part of the reason why he got off is because he went back to the place where they all knew him.
Gosh.
Another reason why he got off is because Knobs didn't press charges.
Yeah, so I mean, like, you just go, and they were all like, we all knew he was weird, but we didn't know anything about his private life. Now we definitely know.
Mm-hmm.
And Dennis Nilsson's just like, is it me? Did I do it again?
It is sad to think about. So many people just with all these murders, just the cops just being like, ew, you know, like it's just so sad that they could have stopped so much, so much death if they would have just paid attention. But
yeah. So after that incident, Nelson kept to himself for another 4 months until he ran into an old acquaintance named John Howlett. Now, Howlett's another strange one, and it tells you just how comfortable Nelson had become with the idea of murder, and it also tells you he wasn't necessarily just killing for company.
So now he was enjoying it.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Howlett came over to Nilsson's place where the two ate a meal while they watched a movie on TV. But after the movie, Howlett was tired and asked if he could lie down and get some rest. Now, Nilsson actually didn't even like Howlett or even really find him that attractive, but he begrudgingly said, yes, sure, why not? So at about midnight, Nilsson walked into his room and found Howlett asleep in his bed. And angrily, Nilsson said,
I didn't know you were moving in.
And when Howlett refused to move, Nilsson grabbed him by the neck and violently strangled him to death with more force than any of his other victims and put the body in the wardrobe. Now murder is just a way to solve a problem.
Okay.
Yeah. He just realized that I can do this now. I have the strength. I know how to strangle somebody with my hands. Because up to this point, he'd been using tourniquets. Like, he'd been using either... It was like a string attached to one of his ties. He saw it in a movie. Something like that, where he would wrap the tie around his hands and twist... You would... Do kind of like what Gacy did with the rope board.
Yeah.
Where he would wrap it around their neck and then he'd twist it from behind and make it super, super tight and hold it until they were dead. This time it's like he wants to exert total control. He wants to be like, I'm a fucking badass killer and I can do this shit anytime I want.
Sounds like The Act of Killing, that great documentary when they go through how they kill a lot of the people. Yeah. So he felt validated though, because the guy, he didn't like the guy. He was in his home. So he felt a little bit more like... Rage.
Yeah. He was able to give into his rage a lot more. But now he had an even bigger problem because he didn't have his backyard anymore. He didn't have his floorboards anymore. Nowhere to burn the body. So he had to get rid of it another way. And here's where it's going to get really gross.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yikes.
I feel sick. I do feel sort of physically sick.
Nilsson put a big wooden board over his bathtub and placed Howlett's body on top. He started with the abdominal area first, opening up the stomach and removing the organs. He then cut the organs into 2-inch long chunks and started flushing them down the toilet a half pound at a time.
You can like hear or feel the scissor. Like you can just,
you can hear them plopping down into the water.
And the weird tiny European toilets too, because they're much smaller.
Yeah. And they don't use as much water for environmental reasons. This is not easy.
But when those chunks proved to be a little too solid, Nilsson started boiling the pieces down into a soup. Mess and then started pouring that down the toilet and that flushed down a lot easier.
Okay.
And he did the same with all the flesh.
Okay.
But that's how they make the filler for stuff like hamburgers and chicken nuggets, is they take all the slurry, all the joints and shit, and they boil it into a big vat until it becomes a soup, and then they coagulate it and then they could squirt it out. So technically it's meat, but it's super, super soft.
Yeah, that's what people don't understand. Ronald McDonald's actual kitchen looks like the kitchen from Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It is just disgusting head cheese. Yes.
Well, after the organs came the head. Nilsson boiled it until he could crack the skull open so he could scoop out the brains. And those went into the toilet as well.
All right. I'm just going to ask the question because Henry, you might know this. How long would that take? Is that like 8 hours?
No, you could cook a skull till it's soft in probably about 2 or 3 hours of a hard boil. But brains are always going to be soft. That's why they go so good with eggs. Have you ever had brain and eggs?
No. Oh, okay, let's move on. Man, that is...
And then the hands, feet, and ribs went into the pot one by one, boiled until the flesh could be scraped off. And of course,
what did it smell like, man? Is it musty? Is this also musty?
It's got to smell worse than that.
I know what it smells like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just boiling death.
Yeah, just death. Yeah, it's just death.
Like, okay. But this was before a lot of them rotted, right?
This is pretty quick after.
This is pretty quick. Well, some of them were rotting for a little longer than others. But yeah, they were... Some of them were fairly rotted.
Okay.
Fair amount. Yeah.
All right.
And then, of course, after all this, there were the bones.
Right. Mm. Now, what's he going to do there?
Well, the shoulder bones, those were too big, so he just threw those over his fence into the dump.
Let the neighbors deal with it.
How is it possible? What was it?
Can you imagine seeing, if I saw a neighbor throw a ho-ho wrapper into my yard, I'd be like, what are we doing? I'd be like, hey, is this your dump? If you saw someone throw your full structural parts of a body.
Yeah.
Or to your yard. What are you just like? I must have been a pigeon. A pigeon must have sat on an electrical wire and made all its felt of its feathers off.
You know, yeah.
It was a dump. He lived next to a dump, so he just threw it over into the dump.
It's interesting, though. I would approach a person who threw a candy wrapper in my yard before I approached a person who threw, like, a human femur bone. I might let him go. And just be like, they had a lot. They were busy.
With the rest of the skeleton, the skull, arm bones, leg bones, and pelvis, those were sprinkled in salt, stored in a tea chest, and covered in a curtain that Nilsson had found on the street and just put that in the corner of his apartment.
Hmm.
This entire process was done, at least partly, 3 times over the next 18 months.
Wow.
And those are the ones he managed to kill. Another 5 got away.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting about Dennis Nilsen? I think we cover this at all. It's very similar, I want to say, to a BTK. He would do shit where there was a body discovered. There's a thing, a lump wrapped in a carpet on his street, and he called the cops saying, there's a murderer in my neighborhood, and it turns out there was a dog in it. He had done this several times about other shit, about other crimes, where he would call the cops on other crimes that were happening, and like animals going missing. Like, obviously, if an animal was going missing, he was like obsessed with it, but he was like always the night watchman.
He was is he living in like Arkham Asylum? Is everybody yes. What do you mean there was just a dog in a car in
London
a carpet?
In the late 70s was a pretty dark place.
Okay.
Yeah, late 70s, early 80s. He was a busybody. Like, he was, they said he was by nature a complainer, and that even like went over into his like politics as well, is that he was constantly complaining about politics.
BTK, you know, yeah, you're
one
right
of those
about
guys
that.
Talking about Margaret Thatcher like 100% of the time.
I see.
Iron Pants. I remember Iron Pants. Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the only thing I know about Margaret Thatcher is that Meryl Streep played her in a
movie.
I don't
think it's Iron Pants.
I think they called her Iron Pants.
Was it Iron Pants?
They called her the Iron Lady. But I think Iron Pants may have been like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge type of way to refer to her.
I'm not sure. Maybe.
So one of the guys that got away was named Carl Stoder. He was feeling kind of low the night he and Nilsen met in a pub in the summer of 1983.
All right.
But Nilsen managed to cheer him up, and he invited him back to his place.
Okay, what the hell did Dennis Nilsen do to cheer him up? What's the joke? What's the go-to Dennis Nilsen joke that works every time?
You want to see something funny?
Yeah.
Opens up the cupboard. This isn't you.
That's a classic.
But even before they arrived, Stoder had started to feel a little uneasy. First, Nilsen had gotten into a screaming match with the cab driver on the way.
I don't know if that's like at all. Not like going with Ben Kissel with a head full of acid through a drunk checkpoint in Los Angeles.
Buddy, that Uber driver loved me. He agreed with every single thing I said about the police state. But that's interesting. The UK, great taxi drivers.
Great taxi drivers.
Maybe they didn't have him so good back in the day.
But. I think he was just a dickhead.
Okay.
Yeah, he got angry very easily.
You know what? I'll believe it.
Then, when they got back to Dennis's house, Nilsen brought out his Laurie Anderson record, brought out Oh Superman, and insisted that Stoder listen to it through the headphones.
Come on.
And Carl listened, but he said he was acutely aware that Nilsen was standing behind him for the entire 8.5 minutes, just staring at the back of Stoder's head.
This guy is you're right. This is next level creep behavior.
Yeah, it's just, everything about it is just creep. I mean, it's super creep.
And he's already murdered 11 people.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they fooled around a little bit after that, but the rum was going to Stoder's head, so he figured he'd better get some sleep. So instead of a blanket, Nilsen gave Stoder a sleeping bag. But before Stoder fell asleep, Nilsen made sure to point out that the zipper had come loose from the padding. And he better watch out for it. Don't get caught up in the zipper at night.
Uh-oh.
I'm warning you! Don't you dare get caught up in that zipper, because it's your fault. If you do happen to get something weird happens in your sleep, it's your fault. Not me. I didn't do it. You sexy corpse. I mean, friend.
I'm very much alive.
Yes, I'm sorry.
So about an hour later, Stoder woke up to Nilsen strangling him with that same zipper. And Stoder was almost passed out when Nilsen dragged him to the bathroom to finish him off with the drowning like he had so many times before. But when Stoder stopped fighting, Nilsen suddenly stopped the whole operation, pulled him out of the water, and actually gave him CPR.
So now he likes to kill. Is that what's happening here? He likes the struggle. He likes all that now.
Well, he told Stoder that he'd gotten caught in the zip, just like he'd warned. And Nilsen had brought him to the bathroom to splash water on his face to wake him up. So Stoder, yes, that was his excuse.
There's just like a difference between like splashing water in somebody's face and holding them underwater until they drown.
Yeah, I remember that when I was getting swirlies and I was just like, thank you so much. I thought I was going to pass out.
Thank you, Gus.
So Stoder, he left and he immediately went to the police, but the police didn't believe him. And this isn't just something to blame on the police either, because Stoder's friends didn't believe him either. They said that he was just having a dream about his ex-boyfriend again.
Okay. I kind of want to know what happened with the ex-boyfriend.
Ex-boyfriend. It was just an abusive ex-boyfriend. Oh, yeah. Now, Nilsson said that he stopped the murder because Stotur had been, quote, rendered passive, and therefore the fantasy had been achieved. But he also told Stotur from prison that he hadn't killed him because, quote,
a thin strand of humanity passed between us.
But Stotur thinks that Nilsson spared his life because he suddenly realized he had no more room for another dead body. And while I think that's closer, I don't think that's quite it either. See, this was only about 2 months after John Hallett. Now remember, Nilsson hated the dissection part of the process, and I imagine he wasn't too eager to do it again. He knew, at least at that time, that one killing meant one dissection in this new apartment. It wasn't like in the old days when you could just kind of let him pile up before doing a big spring cleaning.
Yeah, he's got to do a lot more production now. There's a lot of producing here. And I mean, and without a proper, like, production team.
Yeah, a one-man band like Moby.
Like Moby?
He has a production team.
Moby plays all of his own instruments.
On a computer. And also, I'm going to fight you on this. No, because also he samples from other people. He literally needs to have other music done in order for him to do music.
Yeah, well, the other music are his corpses.
Interesting. They're the dirty plates.
Interesting. But pretty soon, not even the prospect of a dissection would stop Dennis Nilsson from killing. And there were a couple other near misses as well. One guy named Martin Hunter Craig said he went over to Nilsson's place and remembered Nilsson drunkenly saying he had to ask the professor if it was okay for Hunter Craig to stay over.
If someone ever says that to you, that they have to ask the professor, don't look down because they have unzipped their zipper and they have they are displaying to you genitalia.
Yes, absolutely. Go to ask the professor.
Right.
And then just like, what do eye you contact. Think, Mr. Professor?
Not breaking eye contact. No.
And strangely, Hunter Craig wasn't the only survivor that Nilsson said this to, that he had to ask the professor.
Okay.
I think that he also just got drunk and fucking, like, he got dramatic.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Another man named Trevor Simpson remembered that as well. And Trevor also has possibly the strangest survivor story out of all of them. He said he woke up in Nilsson's apartment at 1 a.m. to a smoke-filled room. So he ran to the kitchen, and in the kitchen was sitting Nilsson, casually drinking a glass of water. And when Simpson went back to the living room, he saw that Nilsson had just set a pair of jeans on fire, presumably to asphyxiate him.
It's a bad idea. He wanted to smoke him out of consciousness. He's trying to smoke him out, but in a way it made no sense. And I mean, obviously he's ill. It always comes back to his plans are always informed by the fact that he is deeply, deeply insane.
That's right.
So this was not the best well thought out concept.
Thank you for bringing that up again. I always forget. This is not. Yes. Okay. That helps explain it a little bit.
In the end, though, Nilsson's last victim, gutter punk Stephen Sinclair, would be killed much the same way as Nilsson's first. Mm. Nilsson said he was in his home with Sinclair when he said, quote,
"Oh, Stephen, here I go again."
What?
Stephen was sitting in Nilsson's chair listening to The Who's Tommy on Nilsson's headphones, The Who's Tommy being another one of Nilsson's favorites. Nilsson approached Sinclair from behind and strangled him with a tie, just as Nilsson had his first victim. So after about a week of laying the body out in front of a mirror and putting talc on his own skin to better match that of the victims.
Yeah.
After doing that whole rigmarole.
Of course.
We're going to yada, yada, yada that.
Royal wedding.
Nilsson slowly began the disposal process one more time. But it's this that got Nilsson caught.
All right.
In early February of 1983, a couple of Nilsson's neighbors discovered that all of their drains were clogged.
Ah.
One man in particular, named Jim Alcock,
my friend calls me Nobles. Come on.
That's a fun name. He's not a victim, right?
No, he's not.
Alcock. That's a hell of a last name. I like that. Wow.
Well, he took it upon himself to call a plumber. But while Alcock was waiting,
just feel like Alcock is talking to God, be like, "You could have made me, could have given me a mouth and some eyes. You made me Alcock."
Yeah, but it's a funny joke, right?
Yeah.
I'm a black woman.
Who knew?
But while Alcock was waiting, he remarked to Nilsson, as Nilsson was on his way out, Hey, Nelson, better lay off on using the toilet for a bit.
Oh.
Drains are all clogged.
Oh.
So, of course, the first thing Nelson thought was, oh, shit, this might be my fault.
I kind of maybe my doof, but I'm sorry about it.
Jesus Christ.
For the longest time, too, his neighbors hated him because they thought he just took huge dumps with not realizing what he was actually doing in there.
And so Nelson spent the entire next day cleaning up as much of his last mess as he could. And then for days after that, Nelson sat just waiting for the plumber to show, for the hammer to drop. And finally, the plumber came on February 7th. So that night, a plumber named Mike Catran from the Dino Rod Company.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right, Alcock.
He arrived at 23 Cranley Gardens. Alcock took Catran out back to the manhole to take a look in the building's plumbing. Catran, who has been eating out on this story for decades.
It's a great plumber story. This is a plumber's hall of fame story.
Yeah. He said he took one look at the blockage with his flashlight and said, quote,
I haven't been in this job for long, but I know this isn't shit. And I know shit.
I would assume he does. Yeah.
You get five people to shit in a tube, and I'll look at the shit and I'll tell you everything about their jobs and tell you everything about their love life. Sorry, I'm a bit of an expert on it.
Yeah,
if I see shit, I point at it. That's shit. Oh, yeah, that's piss. That's a puddle of human piss, and I like it. I like it. It's my job to know it. All right?
All right, takes his job seriously.
I know shit!
I believe it. I believe it.
Now, while you'd think this would be Nilsson's time to cut and run, he instead took the time to write a complaint letter to his landlord about the drains. Ugh. And he then went around and got the other five tenants in the house to sign the letter.
Wow.
He's doing the no collusion. He's doing no collusion.
He went down to get Alcock's signature down by the manhole, too, where he heard the plumber say that this seemed like a situation for the old Bill.
What the hell is that?
Cops. Londoners say.
Because I know shit. And I'll tell you what, if it's shit, I can mush it between my hands, I can put it in my mouth, and I can taste that it's shit. But when I put it in my mouth, I smell... It's delicious. Whoever made this is a goddamn genius and needs to talk to little Ramsey fella. I've been working with down a lot. He curses a mite, but he loves his family.
Oh, that's nice.
So Nelson looked in the hole at the blockage and said, quote,
oh, it looks more to me like someone's been flushing down the Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Naturally.
And that kind of gave him an idea.
Uh-oh.
After Catran left, Nelson went back down to the manhole, opened it up, and started clearing out the blockage best as he could.
Oh, God.
His actual plan was to wake up in the morning, go buy some KFC, rip the meat off the bones, come back, and stuff it down in the hole and hope that everyone would just forget about it.
His whole plan was, with any luck, they'll think it's chicken?
Yeah.
He's insane. Okay, that's right.
Because then Catran's down there looking at all this Kentucky Fried Chicken. He's like, all right, let me suck on some of this. Hey, this is chicken. It ain't shit. I'm going to see it again. How many times am I going to say it? I brought a bag of my own personal shit so I can show you next to this chicken bits. Yeah, it ain't shit.
Oh, my goodness. What?
But Nelson's cover had already been blown.
Sure.
Before he'd even gone asleep. Because Alcock had heard the manhole clatter when Nelson had taken it off. So he sat and watched for 10 minutes as Nelson just picked each little chunk out of the hole.
But this is after. These guys are all living on top of each other. He's been blasting music out of this apartment for weeks, for the entire time he's been living there.
Yeah,
months,
almost 2 years.
Men have
been going in there and not coming out.
Right.
They know that he's doing weird shit in that spot. They all have rumors. Because everyone's saying, because he was obviously the weird guy of the building. Cut to, there's a hubbub about something's going on in the drain. They're all busybodies doing the old, like, weird, like, Nana hats that everyone has in Great Britain, what they wear before they go to sleep. And they're looking out, like, you have Alcock up to his rim. watching through the windows, just to be like, you know, like Dennis is like, something has to be done about these drains. It's like, oh, there's something going on there. Watching him out in the middle of the night, just rummaging around in the drains, acting like no one can see him with a bucket of KFC.
Right.
Thinking he's just shoving it in here.
He didn't actually make it to the KFC.
He didn't do it.
He did not make it because the next day, Alcott confronted him. Okay. And was like, what were you doing out there last night? And Nelson was like, I was just peeing.
He said, I was peeing directly into the drain. That's what he said.
Oh, I see. Skipping the middleman. That's what the toilet is.
Because the toilet was clogged. So he had to pee directly in the drain. But of course, he couldn't pee directly in the drain if all of the stuff was clogged. So he had to take it all out so he could pee directly in the drain.
Yeah, then he becomes fucking Seinfeld again, where he's like, what is the deal with having toilets? Well, you could just go right out here to the drain.
Kind of a rear window meets the burbs type situation happening here.
Meets a pile of human shit.
It would be weird if he was just flushing KFC chicken down the toilet. Then he could just be the weird neighbor who flushes KFC chicken. That is also weird.
That's also weird.
But in this world, that's the normal thing.
Yes.
Like, that's what he's pitching. Like, be like, see, I'm just like an everyday Joe.
Yeah, so Nelson, I mean, not really knowing what else to do, he just went to work. And soon after, the plumber showed back up with his boss because his boss is like, hey, I think I found something weird here. Boss is like, well, I'll come down and check it out with you.
All right, I better get a look at it myself then, because it's one thing I know is I know piss. And if it's some kind of solid block of piss, I'll be able to smell it, I'll be able to lick it and tell right away.
So the meat was gone, yes.
Oh.
But Alcock had told the plumbers about what he'd seen the night before. So Katran reached further down into the drain and pulled out a human knuckle.
Wow. So he tried to flush a full knuckle.
And then Katran reached in even further. And each time he reached in, he pulled out either flesh or bone.
I want to hear from plumbers that are listeners.
Yeah.
I said, is it not a thought deep down in the back of your mind? Do you kind of hope it happens once?
I don't know.
You can be, because this guy, Katran, has not paid for a drink like since.
No.
Because it's like, you want to hear a little story about Des Nielsen? Come sit over here and come pop up on my knee. And like, people just come from, he's loving this. Every interview he does, he's got like a little smile where he's excited to tell the story again.
The closest thing I could compare it to, I guess, is the game Double Dare. Remember that Nickelodeon show where they had to grab the flags from like the good but then a bad, the nose, but then it's full of human flesh.
Flesh and hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Now, Nielsen knew when he arrived at work that this is going to be his last day at the office. Like, he just knew,
fuck you,
just
fuck you. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool, fuck you. Like, he gets to do that? Hell yeah, show me the money, man.
It's the opposite of like the guy who is called cool is just like, am I fucking weird? Like, why does he like me?
Yes, so, Greg, you are super weird. I'm just wondering.
Well, he didn't really like say goodbye to anyone. He just left a letter saying that if he ended up dead by the end of the day, it wasn't from a suicide. The cops were going to kill him.
Hey, guys, just so you know, I'm Greg, by the way. I mean, Dennis just said I was cool. Does anybody else have any, like, I'm just going to go to the toilet to flush some of my Kentucky Fried Chicken down the toilet. You guys got any chicken you guys got to get rid of? Because I'm just doing it the usual way.
Of course. Totally normal.
Then Nelson left, delivered the handwritten letter about the drains to his landlord, and went home where three cops were waiting outside his apartment building.
Oh, my gosh.
First cop introduced himself and told Dennis, I'm here about the drains.
Okay.
And Nelson said,
since when have police been interested in blocked drains?
The cops said they'd tell him more once they got up to his flat.
Okay, I'll come with you, yes. Yes, I'll come with you.
So Nelson took him up, and the detective said as soon as Nelson opened the door, just the odor of decomposition, it was too much.
Oh,
it's
quite musty in here.
Now, finally, the detective stopped screwing around and told Dennis that his drains were blocked with human remains. Nelson tried playing coy at first and said,
oh my God, how awful.
And then the cop lost his temper and told Nelson to stop fucking around and tell him where the rest of the body was. And then Nelson, knowing there's just no way out at this point, he said,
in plastic bags in the other room.
And when cops asked if they were talking about one body or two here, Nelson said,
neither. It's 16. Yeah, right. This is absolutely ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. Wow, what if they made the whole plane the black box? My God, bake your head in cheese.
And with that, the search of Nilsson's homemade slaughterhouse began.
Oh, God.
The bags Dennis had spoken of were closed up in his wardrobe. In one was the left section of Stephen Sinclair's torso with the arm still attached. And in another bag was the matching side. And each bag seemed to have something that was just a little bit worse than the last.
Yeah.
One contained just
my stomach.
Badly decomposed, headless, armless torso.
Yeah.
While another held a man's half-boiled head that still had most of the flesh and hair attached.
And then another one was just filled with KFC chicken? What is going on?
Boiled beyond recognition.
Oh,
you know, when
God.
We go to Rome, we're going to Rome this week because of our buddy's wedding. A big thing in Rome, and this is true, is that one of their main delicacies is broiled goat head. They would do boiled and cut, and so... Yeah.
I don't want to eat all of it for him. I'll let him have it. No need. I'm fine. Stick with pizza.
Yeah. The last thing they found, besides the tea chest full of bones, was the lower half of Stephen Sinclair, cleanly cut from the waist down, hidden behind a piece of plywood in Nilsson's bathroom.
This does mirror the Dahmer experience, but I guess less jarred... members.
Well, he actually, Nilsson did say at one point that he would have liked to have kept trophies, but he just didn't have the right liquids.
Oh,
His main thing, what he wished that he could have done, and this is true in his heart of hearts, is that he wished that he could save the dick and balls. He wanted to save the genitalia, but he could not find a proper embalming fluid because he didn't have, I guess, a coroner's license.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's difficult to get the stuff that you need. And also,
makes sense.
Where does one put it? Do you put it in the bathroom? Do you put it in the kitchen? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, doesn't, like, when we were talking about Rasputin and his dog, well, not really his, but it's the horse. But it seems like liquor can hold the famous toe.
Well, you know,
vodka.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Kissel.
Maybe he just wanted to drink the rum too bad. I think he could have put it in the rum. That's all I'm saying. Put it in the little Kibana boy.
If he just thought about it a little more clearly, he could have saved those cocks and balls for himself.
I'm just saying. I just feel like it could be possible. I don't know. But
so Nilsson quickly...
I don't know. This is how every bar conversation ends for me. Anyway, you never know.
Well, Nilsson quickly confessed to his crimes, but still pleaded not guilty in court. Now, surprisingly, though, the jury had a hard time reaching a verdict due to a particularly convincing mental deficiency defense.
Oh,
they're saying he's loose up top?
A little loose.
Okay. Weird.
The first vote came back deadlocked at 6-6. But after further deliberation, the final vote came back 10-2 for guilty.
Wow, they really got a swing there.
They really did, yeah. So Nilsson was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison and was quickly stabbed in the face soon after his conviction.
Yeah, and how'd that go for him?
He recovered.
Okay.
Yeah, he recovered. Yeah, it happened in Wormwood Scrubs prison.
Oh.
Yes, and this is where he immediately retreated to his own shit, and then he began self-exploration. He started, like, continuing his, like, the autobiography that we have heard about since.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. He spent the next few decades writing History of a Drowning Boy that never saw the light of day while he was still alive.
Hmm.
And Dennis Nilsson never will see it published because Dennis Nilsson died during surgery earlier this month at the age of 72.
Wow.
I mean, and because the surgery was... He wanted his viscera removed and put into a bag. I can't imagine this shit. It's just so fucked up. History of a Drowned Boy is actually supposed to come out posthumously. There's talk that it was saved so that it would be released. And there's some chunks of it. I found a little bits of it that on chunks. After this point,
yeah,
it's just like all of the terms.
A horrible connotation now because of this.
Yeah.
But
so there are sections of it.
Again, still same thing. Yep,
same
different blurbs, but somehow that still doesn't work.
Like the noise that the intestines made when they were being dropped into the toilet.
Paragraphs. There are paragraphs of it.
There we go. That's good.
And so, let's take this series out on one of Dennis Nilsson's numerous untitled poems.
Okay.
Lives of Sorrow, Bones of the Dead, Given by the Sea to Fitful Head. A million seabirds, white with despair, screaming above in the crisp new air. A hand, a smooth and empty hand, always out of reach, like a sailor's body, drowned upon the beach.
Woo, 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 woo. We've got a nerd alert. We've got
no,
a nerd alert.
No, not for
we've
that one. He's alert. Technically, he's allowed to be like that.
He is. I guess. He is. Oh, I didn't even know they gave quills out in prison. But that you definitely, like, it's an ascot, but it's probably just toilet paper. It's like, you know how prison, it's like it, they just kind of mimic things, but everything is made out of soap or toilet paper or toothbrush. Oh, my God. Well, I got to say, I mean, he had a much better life than he deserved. 72 years old. Yep. They still gave him surgery. And wow. All right. Yeah, well, man. That guy is. You know what? That is ridiculous. That's the fight.
It is absolutely ridiculous.
It's just creepy. He's one of the creepiest guys that I think we've ever covered.
Yeah, it's also, I don't know why, I have a hard time believing it because it's so, like, shoving human body parts down. It's like,
but there's
almost cartoon.
Like,
but I know it's true.
Yeah.
But it's almost difficult to take it, like, seriously because it's so over the top and crazy.
Yeah.
It's like out of Fargo or something.
It is one of those stories that we'll cover every once in a while, kind of like with Ed Gein. I think I almost put it in the level of Ed Gein. And I mean, obviously, Dahmer, of just sometimes your creepy neighbor that you get creepy vibes for is that.
Yes.
They are exactly as they appear to be.
Right.
It's a part of what keeps our show alive are these stories where it's just like, there are monsters everywhere.
Yep.
But there's not.
You just got to be really careful.
There are not monsters everywhere. If there's one thing we are not, we are not a fear-mongering podcast.
No,
These are three men out of billions.
Exactly.
Monsters,
of course. And most of the neighbors
everywhere.
Most of the neighbors you think are creepy are more like the old man from Monster Squad.
Oh,
the German fella, the Jewish German man, and not the creepy person from the movie It who wants to have him drink tea.
Most of the creepy guys are just they're just socially awkward.
There is a lot of that.
But it makes me want to go in their homes and start being like, where are the bodies?
Yeah.
Where are the bodies? Like immediately just trying to establish dominance.
Well, I mean, I don't mind. I don't not suggest just throwing it out there if you enter a new home, just like, where are the bodies? And just see how they react. And then, but of course, inevitably, they'll shut the door behind you as you leave and be like, that guy was creepy as shit. And then, oh, you're the creepy one.
But that's what you do. I mean, you gotta be the creepy one.
Yes.
That's how you eliminate the other creepy ones. You become creepy first.
I do love the irony of us being like, watch out for the creepy ones. And meanwhile, we're like hanging out in Pittsburgh and they're like, our house is a horror museum. are we the creepy ones?
Yeah, Trundle Manor. Yeah, exactly.
That place
you know
great.
What'll really help Trundle you Manor. Do it? Listen to this Rick Wakeman album fucking DeMarcus sent me the other night. Like, if you want to just watch your brain slowly fold into madness,
or
just eat
about
a bunch of edibles and listen to Rhapsodies.
Rhapsodies is a wonderful album.
It's just like the maniacal fun. It sounds like a steampunk one-man band with like a keyboard attached to a guy's knees and he's got a drum machine on his feet. And it's just like, this is a lot of sound.
Yeah, it is a lot. It's a lot to deal with. A lot coming at y'all at once. That's prog, baby.
Things getting a lot of crank, like those crank noisemakers, and like, and then, it's a lot of that.
Absolutely. I mean, if they were curing cancer or if it was like a scientist figuring out how to go to space, it's good music.
Yeah.
It's just the context of the strangulation and then obviously.
Scientists love prog rock.
I'm sure they do. It's very, it's like a robot yelling at its parents.
Something
so it
really
makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. Yeah, angst robot. Something about him strangling a drifter in an armchair with a bump.
Yep.
Like playing in the background. It's very creepy to me.
Yes, it's different when it's like the movie Hidden Figures and they just solved a problem and you're walking down the street very confidently. I'm like, that's a good song.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, context matters. That's what this is
all
about.
That's what we've learned.
That's the only thing I've ever learned. All right. Well, let's see here. So let's say thank everyone for Patreon, for giving to our Patreon. Thank you all so much. Without you, none of this is possible. We have a very fun interview coming up for you guys this week that I think you're going to enjoy it. So if you haven't given yet, please do. And I think you'll enjoy the bonus content.
Yeah, thank you very much, everybody, who gave to our Patreon. And thanks to everyone who bought pre-sale tickets for our San Diego show.
Ooh.
That's coming up. We're going to be doing a show during San Diego Comic-Con this year. And we're going to be doing some Adult Swim stuff actually at the Comic-Con. So go to lastpodcastontheleft.com to get tickets for that. Those are definitely going to sell out. And we've also got a ton of shows coming up this summer that we're hoping to announce here within the next couple weeks. And remember, if you are a Patreon member, then you get early access to all of our tickets, and you can make sure to come see us when we come to your town this summer, because we're coming to a bunch.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We'll be able to entertain you in front of you.
Yeah.
And you're going to like it, hopefully.
I hope so. Yeah.
Please just don't say anything. If you don't like it, keep it to yourself and your own tiny, just keep your frowns in your bag.
That's sounds like something this guy that's I already forgot his name. Nilsson might say. Good Lord. All right, everyone.
Follow us on Twitter at Henry Loves You, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel. Follow us on Instagram at Dr. Fantasty, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel, the number one. And follow us on all of the bullshits at LP on the left.
That's right. Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gene.
Hail me. And buy those new Hail Me pins.
Oh, yeah, those are great. They're really cool. Those pins are awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got the best. You guys are, and all of the work of, that you guys do with the arts and the paintings and all the stitch work, you guys are also talented.
Thanks, Dad. At, it's at.